three evenings in which it's supposed to be a seminar on Vaishnava etiquette, although it's a Vaishnava etiquette which includes culture and behavior, which is a very vast topic because it covers all the activities that devotees perform in the day and throughout the year, guidelines in how we should act, how we should speak, everything that we do. So we're just trying to cover some topics briefly. Some of you had that printout. Did any of you read through that? Did you get a chance to read through that? Anyone? You read through? Which part? All of it? Uncleanliness. Yes. So that's the subject which we're going to cover this evening. We're going to discuss in brief the topic of cleanliness in connection with a verse in Bhagavad Gita in which Lord Krishna discusses cleanliness. Yeah, this is a strange arrangement here. It's designed so everything falls off. Lack of Krishna consciousness. Srimad Bhagavad Gita, chapter 16, text 7, translation and commentary by His Divine Grace Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, founder Acharya of ISKCON. Lord Krishna describes the situation of the demons as follows. Lord Krishna says, those who are demoniac do not know what is to be done and what is not to be done. Neither cleanliness, nor proper behavior, nor truth is found in them. The first, Krishna says, generally speaking, those who are demoniac do not know what is to be done and what is not to be done. And then the first of the three examples he gives of their not knowing what is proper, the first thing he says, nashocham, they're not clean. It is a quality or bad characteristic of the demons. I'll read the purport which discusses this. In every civilized human society, there is some set of scriptural rules and regulations which is followed from the beginning. Especially among the Aryans, those who adopt the Vedic civilization and who are known as the most advanced civilized peoples, those who do not follow the scriptural injunctions are supposed to be demons. Therefore, it is stated here that the demons do not know the scriptural rules, nor do they have any inclination to follow them. Most of them do not know them, and even if some of them know, they have not the tendency to follow them. They have no faith, nor are they willing to act in terms of the Vedic injunctions. The demons are not clean, either externally or internally. One should always be careful to keep his body clean by bathing, brushing teeth, shaving, changing clothes, etc. As far as internal cleanliness is concerned, one should always remember the holy names of God and chant Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. The demons neither like nor follow all these rules for external and internal cleanliness. As for behavior, there are many rules and regulations guiding human behavior, such as the Manu Sanghita, which is the law of the human race. Even up today, those who are Hindu follow the Manu Sanghita. Laws of inheritance and other legalities are derived from this book. Now in the Manu Sanghita it is clearly stated that a woman should not be given freedom. That does not mean that women are to be kept as slaves, but they are like children. Children are not given freedom, but that does not mean that they are kept as slaves. The demons have now neglected such injunctions and they think that women should be given as much freedom as men. However, this has not improved the social condition of the world. Actually, a woman should be given protection at every stage of life. She should be given protection by the father in her younger days, by the husband in her youth, and by the grown-up sons in her old age. This is proper social behavior according to the Manu Sanghita. But modern education has artificially devised a puffed-up concept of womanly life, and therefore marriage is practically now an imagination in human society. Nor is the moral condition of women very good now. The demons, therefore, do not accept any instruction which is good for society, and because they do not follow the experience of great sages and the rules and regulations laid down by the sages, the social condition of the demoniac people is very miserable. Cleanliness is mentioned here in Bhagavad Gita as the lack of cleanliness as being demoniac. In other words, one who is divine, one who has the daivi sampa, the qualities of a divine or godly person, they're expected to be clean. In Vedic culture, much stress is put on cleanliness, internal and external. Among internal and external cleanliness, internal is most important. Internal means cleanliness of consciousness. The first effect of chanting the Hare Krishna mantra in Sankirtan is Cheto Darpanam Marjanam. Cleaning. No, the first effect is Cheto Darpanam Marjanam. And someone wanted to say more, but this comes under the second effect. So the first effect is cleansing of the consciousness. That means the heart is full of that which is unclean, contaminations. There's a well-known word, common name. Is it common here also? Nirmal. There are many Nirmals in Tamil Nadu. It's a common name in Bengal especially. It means no mal. Nirmal means no mal, no dirt. Nirmal, Nirmal Chand. So the heart clean of dirt. And for that, there are many rules and regulations to follow, among which most important is chanting the holy name. But there are many other considerations also. Aha shuddho sattva shuddhi. If one's food is pure, then one's existence is pure. That's why traditionally, this idea of going to restaurants, going to dosa, dina, and things like this. There's no such thing, because one was very careful about where he took his food. Those who were supposed to be higher class, they were very careful about how they took their food, not just eating here, there, and everywhere, because food carries the consciousness of he who cooks it. Even not everything offered to Krishna is necessarily considered prasad. It depends also on the consciousness of the person who's offering and cooking. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he said that if we eat food here and there, then malin hoiman, the mind becomes contaminated. Malin. So malin nirmal. Cleanliness. We're interested in clean consciousness. So for that, external cleanliness is also essential. Now with all these points, when we're discussing spiritual activities for spiritual advancement, we'll find that all the activities that we take up, such as this evening we're discussing cleanliness, that will help us to make advancement. And also, the cleanliness, for instance, is an example of one whose consciousness is also clean. It works both ways. If we follow external cleanliness, then it helps to keep our consciousness pure and clean. And if our consciousness is pure and clean, then automatically we will be pure. Keep our surroundings and everything else pure and clean. So cause and effect, they intermingle. It's just like if we hear nicely, then that helps us to chant nicely. And if we chant nicely, that helps us to hear nicely. So that it all interacts. So cleanliness, external cleanliness, as Prabhupada mentions here, keep the body clean, by bathing, brushing teeth, shaving, changing clothes, etc. So our body then our environment, that means where we're staying, the place we're living in, and that should also be kept clean. Everything should be kept very clean. That is the symptom of a person who is in sattva-gun. To come to the pure platform of shuddha-sattva, we have to cultivate the mode of goodness. A devotee is beyond the modes of nature, but the mode of goodness is conducive to self-realization. Therefore, a devotee cultivates activities of the mode of goodness, of which a primary one is keeping clean. One, a Brahmin, here the word is said, na shocha, no cleanliness. So Brahmin is known as shuchi. Shuchi means clean and pure. So the two concepts are interlinked. Cleanliness and purity. When we say cheto darpana marjanam, that cleanliness, what does it actually mean? It doesn't refer to physical cleanliness, but it refers to purity of consciousness. Because the two concepts are intimately related. You have your hand on your mouth. Now there's a good example how purity and cleanliness are related, but one may be physically clean but mentally dirty. That's also possible. Just like I remember that when I was a child, occasionally I used to visit my uncle's house, and his wife, my aunt, she used to keep the house very clean, everything very clean and nice, which is good. But of course, normal Western people, they didn't have any concept of Krishna consciousness, so everything was kept very clean, but eating meat and everything else. There's no concept of that being wrong in their culture. Now in India also, there's no such idea that eating meat is wrong or any such thing. That's gone. So cleanliness and purity are not necessarily synonymous. Although they are interlinked, if one does not bathe regularly, he cannot be pure. On the other hand, if one does bathe regularly, but his consciousness is, he's not cultivating pure Krishna consciousness, then he may be physically clean, but mentally contaminated. Just like we have the story of Amogha in Chaitanya Charitamrita, who was Brahmin by caste and was therefore probably very clean, because Brahmins used to follow their duties and they kept physically very clean, bathing three times a day and so many things. But his consciousness was contaminated because he was always criticizing Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So, physical cleanliness is required to be pure, generally. Although we find in the case of some great devotees, like Bhakshidas Babaji, he was completely pure in his consciousness, although he never took bath. He never passed stool either. So, if you want to not take bath on making the plea of following in the footsteps of Bhakshidas Babaji, first you have to stop passing stool. And not just out of constipation, but just out of transcendental aprakrita, alokic, this transcendental advancement. Now, just like yesterday, I was pointing out this common habit in the modern age that people have of putting, they always like to put their hand on their mouth, which is very unclean. So I was saying to one devotee, I was pointing out to him, you see, now your hand is dirty. You put, not dirty, you couldn't see any dirt. Sometimes I remember in the West there's this idea of licking your hands clean. After you, what do they say, finger licking good? Have you heard that? You're lucky you didn't. That's a famous advertisement for Kentucky Fried Chicken. In which maybe they don't say that in India because there's no such concept. But they advertise finger-licking good. That means it's so good, you lick it with... You, when you're eating it, it tastes so good that you want to lick all the fat off with off your fingers. Horrible, no? Western culture is very degraded. Now, you may be wondering why I'm pushing this Indian culture. But when you see how degraded the Western culture is, you want to try and make something better. So, it may appear to be clean. The cat... One name in Sanskrit for cat is Marjara, which gives the idea that he's always doing marjan. Why? Because there's always licking. The cat is always licking the body clean, apparently clean, but the cat is a contaminated creature. According to Vedic understanding, dogs and cats are unclean. You don't keep them inside the house as they do in the modern age. Man's best friend. Take wherever you go, you take the dog in your car and everything. But they're unclean because they lick. There are various reasons. One reason because they eat meat. Another reason because they always lick their body. So that is very unclean. So that I was saying that yesterday. Prabhupada said the mouth is more contaminated than the anus. Because actually you'll find most of the diseases are spread by oral, either direct oral contact or by breathing. So this idea of putting your hand on your mouth and then you'll pick up the Bhagavad Gita, do puja, arati and everything, but immediately you become contaminated putting the hand to the mouth. It may not seem, you see, you look at your hand. It doesn't look unclean, but it's unclean. Therefore, the hand is put to the mouth only when we're eating. That's all. Or in the morning, you brush your teeth. But then you have to take bath afterwards. So, rules of cleanliness and purity. Now, again, if we follow these rules and regulations, if we keep clean, then definitely it affects our consciousness. If you walk into someone's home and you find everything is just thrown here and there and there's thick dirt, then it's a different feeling to walking into a home which is very clean and neat and tidy. There's a great difference, isn't there? If we're to do puja, then if we see that the arati, brass, everything is kept very clean, then we feel very happy to do puja. But if it's all the copper and everything isn't clean for many days, then you say, what is this? That's one of the rules of bhakti, that every day you have to clean the puja paraphernalia. Not that once a year on Janmashtami you clean it up. Or you say, we're cleaning, we washed it. But no, it has to be. For Krishna, everything has to be, copper especially means it has to be cleaned every day. Otherwise, where is the bhakti? That's one of the symptoms as described in Vaikuntha, that the Lakshmis, they're always cleaning everything, even though nothing's dirty. But as a point of seva, they like to see everything should be very clean and nice. So that again, as I was saying yesterday, this is all connected with our consciousness. That if we have the consciousness or the conscientiousness of how Krishna should be served nicely, and then we like to keep everything clean, because Krishna is first class. Krishna is not filthy bum in the street. Krishna is first class. And Krishna can only be served properly in a first class way. We may think, I'll just do somehow or other. But this is not suitable for Krishna. You'll see, that, just to give an example, even if there's some big businessman, then he will have as his personal assistants, he won't just pick up any bum, but he'll see that they're very well qualified, and the people who are serving him, they'll get paid well also, but they have to be very conscientious, they have to do their job well, they have to do everything properly. So even a big businessman of this material world, if someone's going to be in his personal staff, personally dealing with him and seeing to his arranging his travel schedule and his meals and so many things, then they have to be very much conscientious and they have to do things properly, because he's an important person. And he's paying good money, so he expects a good job. Another thing is that he can't afford, nor is it proper for such a big person, that his personal assistants just don't do their job properly, because that causes inconvenience to him. So in the same way, if we're to serve Krishna properly, then we have to do everything in a very proper way. That means that we cannot be lazy. Now in the modern age, everyone has become lazy, because everything is done by machines, and if it's not done by a machine, then we don't want to do it. We feel we don't want to do it. But previously everyone was busy. There are many activities to perform. Everyone would be up early in the morning. And the rule was that the women had to clean the whole house. Everything should be cleaned before sunrise. Otherwise it's inauspicious. Do you know that? Does anyone know such a thing? The house and the courtyard. You're supposed to put clean outside, and then only when you brush the whole courtyard, then you brush, wash, and then you put rangoli. Before everything, before sunrise. After cleaning the whole house instantly. So they may not want to do in the modern age, but then neither the consciousness is clean nor anything else is clean, and they also become fat and they have to go to the slimming club because they're not doing any work. So these are basic, the cleanliness that is a basic symptom of human civilization. We see this is to a large extent lost in modern India, where it's actually shocking. You see, there's so much garbage is thrown everywhere. And even if we go in some apartment building, people may clean inside their house, but just outside on the steps, it'll be absolutely filthy. But everyone's thinking, I'm not. We're living in an apartment building. And so it'll be filthy. And everyone will, they don't care. If we go to the student hostels, if you want to see real filth, you can go to the student hostels. These are the people being trained up to be the leaders of society. They're supposed to be the most intelligent. Filthy. So dirty. Now, in Hindu culture, there's some kind of stigma. Prataparudra Maharaj, he also got the mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who was not at all willing to give it. But when he saw that Prataparudra Maharaj is prepared to clean for Krishna, then he gave his mercy to him. So, cleanliness, personal cleanliness, means regularly taking bath. Now that's still part of life in India, maybe especially here because it's hot here. You'll find in In North India, in the winter, some people, they don't like to take bath because it's cold. But at least here you're doing because you feel refreshed to do so. Otherwise, of course, the time is coming when there'll be no water. Already it's there. Because of sinful life, people then know not water is coming. But taking bath regularly, keeping one's home, the ashram should be very clean. Of course, here is a very dusty area. But nevertheless, there should be conscientiousness, cleanliness, especially in deity worship. Not only in deity worship, Prabhupada said that don't think that Krishna is only in the temple room, the whole ashram, the whole temple. It's all Krishna's house. So if we want to be Krishna conscious, then we should keep everything very clean. And in one's home, if we're living at home, we should also keep that clean, means regularly, daily cleaning, and from time to time we need to do a big cleanup. Just like Chaitanya Mahaprabhu cleaned up the Gundicha temple. So at least once a year in our temples there should be a big cleanup. But actually we have, in the Western countries we call it a Maha cleanup. We used to do every month. There are certain things, it needs organization. The daily such and such cleaning should go on. Daily the floor should be cleaned. The deity paraphernalia should be clean. Clean means not just rinsing with water, but shining. Cleaning with tamarind. So daily cleaning and then weekly cleaning. Some things are needed cleaning on a weekly basis. Then monthly, there are certain things that you have to take everything out of the kitchen, and then you'll find so many things. If you don't take it out, then it may look nice, but once you take it out, you'll find behind the cupboards there are dead cockroaches and so many things. During that Gundicha Marjan in the kitchen in Baroda, we found some dead bats. You know what bats are? Like flying mice. Dead bats and some leakage which was causing the whole, behind the covers, the whole area was rotting. So every month if we take everything out, then we can see all these things. Even if you don't see the dirt, then it still affects our consciousness and it's still unhygienic. That all, once the devotees, they said to Prabhupada, you see there are so many rats running around the temple, what should we do? We should kill them. Prabhupada said, you should be killed. He wrote that the rats are coming because you are not clean. You're eating and then you're just leaving the pots. And then what do you expect? There's so many rats and cockroaches will come. So cleaning means immediately after. If you don't clean up immediately after taking prasad, or if you keep it, leave it out open, then definitely rats are going to come. You got your hand on your mouth. You should have learned this when you were 3 years old. How old are you now? 25. 27. All right. Well, 24 years later. You're going to wash your hand, but in the meantime, you put your hand on your bead bag. You see? Better not to put your hand on your mouth, otherwise you contaminate everything. Prabhupada, you may think I'm a fanatic, but if I am, then Prabhupada is, because he also would correct the devotees. They put their hand on their mouth. One devotee she was always putting her hand on her foot. Prabhupada was again and again telling, don't do that. And she said, well, Prabhupada, I might as well cut my foot off. And Prabhupada said, yes. She sarcastically said, I might as well cut my foot off. Prabhupada said, yes. He agreed. So it all requires some organizing. First of all, consciousness that this is required. we should serve Krishna very nicely. If we go into a temple which is very clean and nice, or any place, like I was saying, someone's home, then we feel ourselves very clean and nice. And people notice that and praise that. We also, I remember in Haridwar or Rishikesh, I found myself, some place I went, and I came out of the bazaar, which is normal, filthy Indian bazaar with garbage thrown everywhere. And I came inside, I came to some temple, Krishna temple, saw the very nice, all marble, and there was a nice garden and everything, very clean, so nice to come. And then sometimes we, now I think the situation is better, but remember, I remember one time I went to Sri Rangam and I saw piles of garbage. It's just, I think it's horrible. Why are they having such piles of garbage? It's supposed to be the Lord's town. So in our temples also, sometimes people praise if the temple is kept very clean. Oh, very clean, they say, very nice. But our temples, if we go to temples that are very dirty, and it means this, actually means lack of Krishna consciousness, because if we're Krishna conscious, we should be keeping everything clean and nice for the Lord. These are very basic things. We say that we could be talking about gopi leelas or such things, but there's no question of gopi leela. First you have to clean, that comes first. Even Prabhupada said, cleaning comes before japa. He was saying in Mayapur, he said, everything should be, on a chant japa, Prabhupada said, first cleaning, later japing. He said, it is just an excuse, he said. Everything should be cleaned early in the morning. So nowadays we find people, they like to talk so many high things, but they don't even know the first things, like don't put your hand in your mouth, and they're talking. They're talking gopi leela, chewing their fingers. And putting their hand in their mouth, and then putting their hands on their beads. So we should be somewhat practical and realistic. First things first. All these things should... Actually, these things shouldn't have to be taught to adults. It should be learned in childhood. And it shouldn't have to be taught by gurus. See, the children, they're sent to the gurukul at the age of 5 or 7, like this. Already at home, they're supposed to have some training. But unfortunately, because we live in the modern demoniac age, pravritting cha nivritting cha janana vidurasura, because we are born, we may be very proud, I'm from an Aya family or Iyengar family or whatever, but there's no training. Ayas and Iyengars, what's the difference between them and the people who are carrying out the dead bodies? It's just the same, low class. There may be some little slight culture, maybe. But basic things, even they don't know. They're drinking coffee and so many things. Unclean. Once the cleanliness is gone, then there's no claim to be a Brahmin. Brahmin means very clean. Prabhupada, many times when he gave Brahmin initiation, he would tell, now you should know, Brahmin means very clean. You should keep very clean. So all these rules and regulations, I've given in my book, which you have some printout, and eventually I hope to print it. I have to print it. I have to finish the book. If you stop calling me, if everyone stops calling me to come, you're very kindly calling me to come to different places, but if I can hide away somewhere, I'll finish this book and it will be valuable, because there are many things people don't know. They think it's just normal to bite their teeth and so many things, stand with their back to the deity, and this book will cover so many things. Kirtan standards, not that we just make up some chant, or even many of the things which we chant regularly in ISKCON, they're neither in Shastra nor are given by any of our acharyas, and Prabhupada even specifically said he didn't like them, and still we chant. Because you don't know. and collecting all these things from many different sources, and particularly what Prabhupada has said, because many of the things Prabhupada wrote so many things in his books, but there are many things he said also, more in philosophy, it's all in Prabhupada's books, but in terms of personal behavior, Prabhupada gave many instructions which are not actually in his books, but which he just, there are so many things, just like, just to give one example, he would chastise if anyone would call him from, disciple would call him from behind, he would say, "You don't do that, that's not proper. You don't call your guru from behind." So there are so many points, and just like I say, this, you're supposed to learn this in childhood, but because we're brought up in the modern demoniac age, we don't know, and people learn their behavior now from the TV. They learn what to do. In this purport, it's very interesting. Prabhupada is talking against this women's liberation. He says, modern education has artificially devised a pumped up concept of womanly life. There's nothing about women's liberation in the verse itself, but Prabhupada has given it as an example of demoniac way of thinking. So this is one thing which is very much being promoted in modern India, especially through the TV and in the education system. Women's liberation. Because they want, the demons want, that human society will not follow any scriptural rules. And as Arjuna says in the beginning of Bhagavad Gita, that if women are not protected, then the whole society will break down. And they want that. I don't know why. Maybe it's better for their business or whatever. If people are interested in Krishna consciousness, then they won't buy Pepsis. So Pepsi and every other of these nonsense businesses, they want the so-called women's liberation, and women, they can work also. Let them also work for the businessmen, and they'll make more money. And never mind the family is all spoiled, what do they care? They don't even want families, because if there's no family life, then you can just enjoy every woman. They're all free, they're all prostitutes. That's stated in Shastra, that in Kali Yoga the prostitutes won't have any job, because every woman will be, it means free. They'll go with one man today, another one tomorrow. This is the outcome of women's liberation. So Prabhupada is pointing out this is demoniac. So we're brought up in the demoniac age. We have so many demoniac wrong ideas, and we think, as the demons do, that the Vedic injunctions, they're all for fools. But actually the Vedic injunctions, they're meant for elevation to Krishna consciousness. They're meant for elevation of consciousness, which culminates in Krishna consciousness. Therefore, in all sections of Vedic society, there are basic rules, like rising early in the morning. Even Mayavadis, who we're philosophically we're totally opposed to, but culturally, it's the same basic culture. Rising early in the morning, taking bath, the same family values, it's the same basic culture. Although Mayavadis and devotees and demigod worshippers, philosophically we have a lot of difference, but the same basic culture is there. The basic culture is meant for spiritual elevation, of which, as Lord Krishna notes here, the first point he makes, cleanliness is the first point. So those who are demoniac, they oppose all these ideas. So devotees, they should live according to the tenets of scripture. Cleanliness is required for purity. For purity means, the first stage of purity is that this to be established in Sattvagu, from which we can come to the platform of Shuddha Sattva. So this is required. Now, as I was saying yesterday, in the modern age, Some kind of compromise has to be there. We can't follow all the Vedic rules and regulations unless, as Prabhupada very much wanted, we go to the land and make our own communities. Then it is possible. But living in the city, that example is there. Attached bathroom means that automatically the standard of purity is down. Because water, if there's a bathroom, then the whole building is contaminated. And even the water which comes out of the tap is also contaminated. It's not pure. Pure water means it should come from a river, especially a river like the Ganga or Kaveri or Holy River. So there in Shastra it gives so many different standards that the best is water from a holy river or a river which flows directly to the ocean. And the next best is water from a direct tributary. And then the next best is a tributary of a tributary. Or water from a sangam, that is also considered very pure then. Because a river is flowing, so that maintains cleanliness if you don't have chemical plants putting pollution into it. Or if you don't have, that's another thing, people pass stool on the side of the river, that's actually not proper. So the river water is very pure. Well water, of course the well, that's or a large body of water. If there's a lake or a big pond, in temples they build tanks. So even though many people bathe in that, it's still considered pure because it's a large body of water. The ocean, that water, that's also, the ocean is called Mahatirtha because all the rivers flow into the ocean. So the ocean is considered very pure for bathing. Then well water, of course the well has to be kept clean and not contaminated. And there has to be a way, in the modern age, if you have a well in the city, because of the attached bathrooms and so on, the water will not be very pure actually, even from the hygienic point of view. So there are different gradations. So tap water, that is, it's never very pure because it comes through iron. But anyway, what to do? We have to use it. Now one question which came up, was the point of purity. That question came up last night, was should ladies in their contaminated period come to the temple? It appears in this temple to be a point of some contention, because traditionally there was no question. There was no question of even them coming into the house, what to speak of coming to the temple. It would not be seen. They would be in their own special room. They were isolated, and only after 4 days then they'd take a head bath and then again they could come out. So that's changed now, the modern age. Working women, they have to go to work. There's no question of whether they're contaminated or whatever. They'll go to, so it's become like that, that they move around freely, and still mostly in most of India, even in Gujarat, I see where people are very modernized. Here also now, Madras has become a completely modernized, means demonized place. But still, the women, they don't like to come to the temple during their contaminated period. Now, Prabhupada allowed that in the West, they could do. That was an adjustment to the Western world, where one thing people don't understand, you know, nor do they have any such culture of such a thing. My outlook is that this is a cultural norm which is followed. Actually, there are reasons for that. It's not just the Vedic directions, they're not just arbitrary, but it's a fact that during that period, those, whatever it may be, 4 days or whatever, that It's according to Ayurveda, that said the woman shouldn't cook because everything she touches will become contaminated. Not just from an imaginary point of view, but actually through the pores of her body, so many contaminations are coming. So it's actually there are different. Why there is that confinement for 4 days? Because it's a very unclean period. So everything she touches becomes contaminated. So that's why they're not supposed to come out at all. And it has other reasons also. In one sense, it gives them a break also, because otherwise they're working very hard. That's a break and a time for quietness and introspection and all these things. So in the modern age, that's gone. Women are working and they're going to office and this and that. But still here, that is in South India, that's maintained in every temple probably in South India except ISKCON Madras. I don't know if it's maintained here or not, but the question is coming up, so it indicates that it's not being maintained. But I would say that there is a rule in Shastra. Prabhupada gave some allowance for the Western countries because they're all, they means we, I'm from that stock, we're all mudhas and mlechas. But you don't have to imitate the mlechas. You should better keep up the high standard as much as you can. Of course, you can say from the transcendental point of view, then, we're not this body, but still there are rules. After passing stool, you don't go in the temple room because you're contaminated. So that's called a contaminated period because there are so many impurities coming from the body. So it's like that. Different people will give different opinions. That's the problem. Understanding Prabhupada's instructions. Prabhupada made certain allowances. How much they should be applied in different times and place and circumstances. Certainly Prabhupada made many allowances for the Western countries, but again, you're supposed to be more, here in India, you're supposed to be more cultured and advanced. So the idea is that the Westerners, they should gradually come up to a higher level, not that you go down. Overall, we should come to a higher level in every sphere. We should come to a higher level in our practices. That is a symptom of bhakti, just like I'm saying. If everything is kept very clean and nice, is it also a symptom of bhakti? And if it's not, then it means that we're very lax and we don't care. That means that our bhakti is not very strong. So that comes to the next point, which we're supposed to be discussing tomorrow, training. That all this training should be there in these different points. So the culture, to a large extent, it's gone now, I'm seeing, even in India. People, they don't know even basic things. The parampara, that just like I was asking yesterday, that how many people were taught not to put their hands in their mouths when they were a child, and about half said yes. Whereas previously, for generations and generations, everyone would be taught. Now a few have been taught, and as I said, you won't teach your children. The parampara is broken, unless you take this up now. So that culture, which is actually maintained in two ways, in the family and in the mats. In the family, so many things are taught. That's why I say the first guru is the mother. If she teaches these things, if she's a playgirl, then she's not going to teach you anything. She's a modern, liberated, get on your scooter with your hair flying in the wind, liberated woman, then obviously she's not going to be a very good mother. But that is the tradition, that the mothers, they teach all these things. I've seen in Bangladesh how they
The women, even the babies are very young, and the natural tendency is to put their hand in their mouth, but they pull it out, and they teach them. Even the child can't even talk, you know what's going on. But they start to teach them. That's how training begins. Training in cleanliness, training in everything. So we'll discuss that more about training. And cleanliness, there are many points. You can read in this printout, there are so many different points. And actually there's another whole section about purity and contamination, which goes with the cleanliness, which has not been printed out here. So this, Krishna willing, this will be printed as a book at some point in time. From here I'm going to Hyderabad, then Bombay, and then to the West, and I'll be there for more than 2 months traveling around. But when I come back, I'm really hoping and planning to sit down in one place and finish this book after I've been collecting materials and working on it now for 12 years, and it's time it was finished. It's long overdue. So, but when this book is published, many of these details will be there, which they are important. I mean, they're important. But Krishna here stresses, na shocham, the demons, they're not clean. And we see Prabhupada, he was always teaching his disciples about these different points. So, I've only given a very general discussion, because some of the details are there, how we have to keep our body clothes. You see this modern idea, you wear this pants and shirt and all this, but you can't keep, you have these pants, you can't keep it very nicely clean. This clothing is correct, cotton cloth like this, and you can wash. Actually, the traditional system is every time you take bath you change your cloth. There was space to dry the cloth, not that you're living in some pigeonhole and there's no courtyard or anything, and your clothing is just the whole family, there's one or two lines. There's plenty of space. People are living in the village and every home had a courtyard. Now no one has a courtyard. They all live in the squashed up. But courtyard means there's space. So you take bath, and every time you take bath, you wash your clothes like this and you change. And this way you remain clean. But that is forgotten in modern life. Even the city is horrible. The first thing when you come out of Chennai Central Station, the first experience of Chennai is the stink of the drain, you see. Isn't it? Is your first welcome to Chennai, and then the sewer smell, big drain, big canal is there. This is modern life. All the big cities. You go in Bombay on the local train, there's one big creek. You can't hold your breath that long to go across it because it's very big. And then holding a breath, and you have to breathe in, and so disgusting. This is modern life. Everything filthy, dirty, and they call it advancement. So don't be fooled by this demoniac civilization. Everything unclean. They want you to eat meat and drink tea, and you see they have the tea stall, or they're here, it's coffee. And they put it in a bucket. They put the cup in a bucket with some water, and they put it in and take it out, and they serve someone else. And the same bucket, putting all day, the same, the cups. So filthy, so dirty. So how can we expect people to be in clean consciousness? The consciousness must be contaminated. And we see that the consciousness of people in the modern age, very low, demoniac consciousness, very, very low. So this is an essential part of Krishna consciousness. Keep clean, physically, and mentally. Hare Krishna. Are there any questions about this? This question's come up again. I think every time this comes up when I'm here, it seems to be a regular question. We also, with these written questions, we get exposed to the wonders of Indian English, the unusual grammar. So I'll rephrase the question. Which should women give importance to? Women at home. Women are supposed to be at home, not supposed to be anywhere else. Which should the women at home give importance to? Home cleanliness, childcare, serving parents, or attending the temple activities and serving the Vaishnavas in the temple? They can do both. That in traditional life they do both. They'll at home they'll do their home duties and they'll visit the temple also. Not one to the exclusion of the other. Both things should be done. They have their material duties to perform also. Just like Arjuna, Krishna told him, the message of Gita, think of me. But Krishna said, you think of me and fight. Consciousness is looking after your baby, bringing up the child in Krishna consciousness. Not that you know. I'm being very Krishna conscious, I'm neglecting my children. I'm so Krishna conscious, I'm neglecting my children. Prabhupada didn't approve of that. While cooking, one sneezes or coughs due to the smoke in the kitchen. Should one discard the food? Well, this is a very practical one. If you're going to sneeze, just turn away from the food. Don't sneeze. That now I feel I'm going to sneeze. Okay, put my head over the pot. It's just some basic common sense. That's all. The toilet in the back building of the temple is very small and does not have provision for hanging one's clothes. Well, you're not supposed to hang your clothes in the toilet, are you? Does this not pollute the devotees? Yeah, I see that. And on this veranda here, the clothes are hanging on the line. And then the devotee, I see when I'm chanting after Mangalati, the devotees who get up after Mangalati, they get up after sunrise or whatever, and then they're all dirty after sleeping, and then they go past all the clothes which are washed. So this is an important point actually of cleanliness, that when we're unclean we shouldn't touch that which is clean. Those who, you see the devotees, they're all taking bath in the same area. The one who's taken bath, those who have not yet taken bath, they should be careful not to touch them. Similarly, the clothing which is washed on the line, you should be careful that when you're in an unclean state not to touch them. It may be difficult here if the wind is blowing and this and that. At least some attempt should be there. Sometimes it's very difficult to do all these things properly, because just like if the space is very limited, there may not be enough space to keep the clothes separately. Then what to do? Then we have to discuss and how to. We have to discuss and try to make some arrangement. And if we can't, then what to do? Sometimes when I'm unclean, I chant the purification mantra. Is it okay? If we're unclean and we're not in a position to become cleaned, then there are some provisions in Shastra. You can. No, that one. You can touch your right ear. It's supposed to be. The right ear is supposed to be pure. That's why you wrap your Yajna Sutra around when you go to the bathroom, because this is supposed to be always pure and clean. So there's a provision. You can touch your right ear and you can say, Om Pavitra Pavitra. You're supposed to be remembering Pundarikaksha. So if you are actually remembering him and not just mumbling a mantra, then
You're supposed to be pure in any circumstance, but that doesn't... There is purification by mantra, but still physical cleanliness is required. That is there. Those mantras are... they are for emergencies. Just like, for instance, if you're on a plane and you have to pass stool in the plane, there's no facility for taking bath. You may still have to chant your jap, but you what to do? Then you say Hare Krishna. That in itself is purification mantra. But that doesn't mean in normal circumstances that you should pass stool and just say Om Pavitra Pavitra Vaya and okay. But I won't bother taking bath, I'm clean. So generally bathing should be performed for becoming clean, but if it's not possible, then we can chant some purification mantra and go on. It's not that we should stop chanting our japa. Sometimes they ask that during our women during their unclean period, should they stop chanting mala and everything? You should go on. You have to chant. Maybe if you want to be very clean, you could get a neem mala and not chant on your tulsi mala. You could do that. That's a possibility. But the chanting should go on. Sometimes we're sick and we can't take, if we're very sick, we can't take bath, but still we try to do some chanting. When we're sick and we're not able to take bath, should we chant the Gayatri Mantra? The same? You may do. In the West, in the West, people put spoons in their mouth, then hands, rather than hands in the name of cleanliness. Oh, yeah, that's another nonsense. You're eating with a spoon, you say, my hand is clean. But it's still contaminated. Because it's touched the spoon to your mouth. And the hand is touching the spoon. So it's contaminated. It's not clean. Generally, we don't need spoons for eating. Krishna gave us the hand. You can't eat properly with a spoon anyway. How can you mix rice and sambar with this? You can't properly mix it. You should eat with your hand. But people think it's very advanced to eat with this, not to eat with your hand. Bhakti Vidya Purna Maharaj once, he said that civilization means to follow this culture that you pass stool in the field, then you go to the river and take bath. That is civilization. And in modern life, they think this is primitive. You should have an attached bathroom. But that is actually uncivilized. Prabhupada many times said that don't be victimized by this rascal civilization. You can ask a question.
How can prasadam? Prasadam is this in the transcendental. How is prasadam affecting sometimes from taking from advanced devotees? Or why we are so careful to not take from our faith? How can karma affect prasadam who is transcendental? Or what is this?
I don't know, your question isn't very clear. What is
taking from others' faith? It's a transcendental.
Except from the senior devotees, we think that it's a Mahapisha. But still, how it is going to get contaminated?
No, this is not contaminated. I can understand. For example, why we are so careful that we don't allow that.
So can I?
Yeah.
This prasadam is transcendental, Maharaj. Mm-hmm. But sometimes when you take prasadam from another devotee, we say we take his karma. From equal devotees, when we share prasadam, we say that we take his karma. How can prasadam can transfer karma? It is transcendental.
How can prasad transfer karma? Prasad is transcendental. Who says that you transfer karma by taking that prasad? The consciousness, just like the consciousness of the cook, is trans. Just like Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, "Bishoyer on the kaile malin haiman." That if we eat the food given by or prepared by a materialistic person, then the mind becomes contaminated. But prasad, there's no karma as such. We don't get sinful. Although the consciousness of the cook may be transferred, that may be there also. So we should see who's. Jananamna Prabhu, he told me once that once he went to one temple where the devotees were fighting and... No, Prabhupada, when he went to some temple they were complaining, you see the devotees, they're fighting, why is that? Prabhupada asked, who is the cook? Another time, on a more positive note, Prabhupada was brought some Mahaprasad, and he saw the puris were cooked just perfectly. He looked at it, he poked his finger and saw how just perfect. He smelled it. He said, call the cook. Who is the cook? It was Kurma, who's now famous for cooking with Kurma. Who's Kurma, apart from being an excellent cook, he's also a very excellent devotee. He's about cleanliness and sadhana. He's very particular. In his kitchen, you can't do anything. There's no talking nonsense. There's no talking except chanting Hare Krishna. The very cleanliness and the whole consciousness, everything should be done very nicely for Krishna. He's a very Krishna conscious person. So Prabhupada called him and said, thank you. Seeing the puri, how nicely it was prepared, he said, thank you for following the rules and regulations very nicely. He said, by your cooking I can understand that you are following the rules and regulations of Krishna consciousness very nicely. Therefore, your consciousness—the implication was that your consciousness is very nice. Therefore, your cooking is very nice. So, cooks—they should also chant and be Krishna conscious. If we. If we see that the cook himself is not very clean consciousness, then even if we put a lot of ghee and so many things, then that won't be very conducive for the devotee's spiritual advancement.
The daily parvaniyas, they use chemicals.
Sorry?
The daily parvaniyas. Chemicals are used for cleaning.
Sometimes chemicals are used for cleaning the deity paraphernalia, brass soap. I guess it can be used, but the tamarind and lemon is traditional, and it's better also. Better in the sense that once you rinse that out, then that's very nice and clean. But if you take the archamanka, the panchapatram, that's been cleaned with brass soap, and you take and you taste. It's a horrible chemical flavor. I mean, there's nothing wrong, but it's better to use the traditional thing. Man can never do better than Krishna's arrangement. That's very messy also, that brass. So it's all become everything that you get, all these black cloths, and there's plenty of tamarind and Tamil Nadu. Tamarind Nadu. I can use that. So we'll finish. Oh, you have that Glimpses book? How many do you have? Only one? Where was that? In the godown here? Oh. This book gives an overview of this whole culture that I'm talking about. One of the books I've written. Which we're also selling now. Some of my books are here on sale. One more question. Circumstantially, we may get home late at night. Is it authorized to take a bath at such times? It's not recommended to take a bath late at night. It's not very healthy to do so. Because it's one thing, it's too much cooling, so it may cause cold. Another thing is that it's very refreshing, so it's not very conducive to taking rest at night. Although sometimes we used to take it when it's very hot, and it's very hot in the summer. Sometimes you want to take a bath at night, and then only you can feel cool enough to take rest. Is it? Sometimes you feel like that. So that may be, but generally it's not recommended. Although you have to see, you see, there are rules and regulations in Shastra, just like this rule, don't bathe at night. That's given in Ayurveda mostly for health reasons. But it's not the same as don't eat meat. Don't eat meat, that is a rule which should be strictly followed. Don't take bath at night, that's a rule that should generally be followed, but it's not so important. It's not against the principles of Krishna consciousness to take a bath at night, but I recommend not to do it because it's generally not considered good for health.